I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. Two more powerful politicians add their voices to a growing chorus.
New York Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer calling on Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign, reversing course due to, quote, the multiple credible sexual harassment and misconduct allegations. They went on to write that the governor has lost the confidence of his governing partners and the people of New York.
Fox's Brian Yenes, the governor himself, remains defiant.
I never harassed anyone. I never abused anyone. I never assaulted anyone.
The governor is also under scrutiny for his handling of nursing home patients during the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. Bank accounts across the U.S. could start getting bigger this weekend as the federal government processes stimulus payments from the latest COVID relief bill that not one Republican approved.
This reckless spending is obviously racking up a lot of debt for our kids and grandkids, but importantly, it's undermining our economic stability.
Congressman Chip Roy. Struggles containing COVID will send Italy back into lockdown. On Monday, people in the most populated regions will be required to stay home except for essential reasons. The city of Minneapolis will pay the family of George Floyd $27 million to settle a wrongful death lawsuit. Floyd died last year after a confrontation with police.
Back when he filed this suit, Benjamin Crump, who represents the family of Floyd, said he wanted to make it financially prohibitive for police to wrongfully kill marginalized people, especially black people.
Fox's Mike Tobin. To Louisville, where it's been 1 year since Breonna Taylor was shot and killed by police. None of the officers directly involved in her death were charged. Taylor's family will participate in a march today. America's listening to Fox News. With the COVID relief bill in the rearview mirror, Democrats appear to be eyeing another legislative priority.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is calling on House committees to begin working on a big, bold, and transformational infrastructure package, a plan, she says, to create good-paying jobs for the future.
Always been bipartisan for us. In the many years I've been in Congress, 3 decades, it's always been bipartisan.
The speaker has not proposed a size or scope of legislation, but any proposal is likely to include not just roads and bridges, but mass transit, high-speed internet, and green energy upgrades. Congress has been divided in the past over cost and how to pay for improvements. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
Prosecutors call him a threat to the community, but a judge in Washington, D.C. has released a man from jail who's charged with conspiring with members of a militia group in the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Authorities have linked Thomas Caldwell to a far-right group called the Oath Keepers, but the judge who released him while he awaits trial says Caldwell didn't enter the Capitol. The judge also says there's no direct evidence that he plotted to in advance. Prosecutors maintain that in a text message, the Virginia man suggested getting a boat to ferry weapons across the Potomac River. While much of the nation got a taste of spring this week, winter is not over yet. Colorado, Wyoming, and Nebraska are bracing for a major snowstorm with strong winds.
Colorado Governor Jared Polis has the National Guard on standby for possible search and rescue missions. The Colorado Department of Transportation also asking drivers there to stay off the roads this weekend. That closures of I-70, I-25, and I-76 are expected.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. In some spots, the storm could dump up to 2 feet of snow. Pam Puso, Fox News.
Good morning to you. Let's begin our drive around the DMV. First and foremost, in the district itself, Alabama Avenue in Southeast, all lanes are currently closed north and southbound in between 13th Street and 15th Place due to a burst water main and the repairs underway. Traveling over now to the BW Parkway southbound just after Route 410, the left lane currently blocked by a crash, so stay to the right side of the roadway to get by. And then over on Branch Avenue in Camp Springs, Route 5 northbound, right at the Beltway, there was a disabled vehicle there, but that has now been cleared away. I'm Bobby Lurie, now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
After an unusually warm work week, we have a perfect spring-like weekend ahead. Temperatures in the 40s and 50s this morning will warm to the upper 50s and low 60s this afternoon, with partly cloudy skies and a northwest breeze. Don't forget our clocks spring ahead tonight. Sunset is at 6:13 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning is 7:21, and sunset tomorrow night will be 7:14 p.m. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Good morning. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. St. Patrick's Day is coming up, so I guess you could call this St. Patrick's weekend, although it's not what it used to be. Maybe it will be next year. Also, it is the first weekend of daylight saving time, so when you hit the sack tonight, make sure you move your clock forward by an hour as we welcome daylight saving time. We've also welcomed a little bit of warm weather recently, and we should have a little bit milder weather, but still fairly decent in the week ahead, and we'll get into that in a few minutes with a full weather forecast. But obviously a lot going on the political front, with President Biden making his first primetime speech on Thursday night, all about COVID relief and the COVID vaccines. I'm not sure if you watched the speech. You may have seen bits and pieces of it if you didn't watch the whole thing. For those that did watch the entire speech, I would ask you this question. Were there any words of unity in the speech? Were there any words directed at half of America that didn't vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? I was hoping to hear something inclusive. Rather, he decided to exclude President Trump, decided to exclude President Trump's COVID-19 task force, decided to exclude the fact that the Trump administration, through Operation Warp Speed, did manage to create the vaccine that President Biden took as he took office. That same vaccine that President Biden has been distributing most recently. None of that was mentioned in the speech. Now, if it, you know, had been a campaign speech, I would understand that. But from someone who has campaigned and promised to be the inclusive president and the unifying president and the bipartisan president, wasn't in the speech. Wasn't in the vote either, because he didn't get any Republicans to vote for the $1.9 trillion budget-busting COVID relief bill. And I'm sure you've heard the debate over the last few weeks and actually the last months as to how much of the money in the bill is actually directed toward immediate COVID relief. But that's another story that will be debated in the weeks ahead. Now, the White House had an outdoor event. Signing of the bill was inside, and then the president made some comments outside about the package before the speech. And Chuck Schumer was there, and it's always amazing. Chuck Schumer manages to position himself immediately over the shoulder of whoever is speaking, and he's got an art of doing this. Now, I would have thought maybe you'd see the vice president in the shot with the president. But no vice president, but there's Chuck Schumer's head perched right on the shoulder of Joe Biden. It just happens all the time. The man never met a camera that he didn't like. Now, a couple of notes from the speech that I thought you might find interesting, from the primetime speech. You may recall that it was the Operation Warp Speed effort that fast-tracked the discovery and creation of the vaccines. Well, here's how President Biden cast the vaccine situation.
2 months ago, this country didn't have nearly enough vaccine supply to vaccinate all or ever near all of the American public. But soon we will.
Well, you know, maybe the reason we didn't have enough vaccine is it was something that wasn't around five or six months ago. And all of a sudden, it was President Trump and Operation Warp Speed who did create the vaccine. It's not like you can create 300 million doses overnight. So, you know, production was underway. Maybe the past 50 days that production has been able to continue so that, yes, we have more vaccines than we did before. And he continued.
We've been working with vaccine manufacturers, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, to manufacture and purchase hundreds of millions of doses
of these three safe, effective vaccines.
Well, where did they come from, Joe? Now, one other note, of course, the pace at which people are being vaccinated, it has stepped up. But again, instead of acknowledging any accomplishment whatsoever of the prior administration, he didn't have to say Trump even. He could have done it by saying the prior administration's COVID task force or the COVID task force in the months prior to me becoming president. I mean, I understand he's got a problem mentioning President Trump in a positive way, but he could have at least acknowledged those people who were on the task force that worked tirelessly to get us where we are today. But anyway, here's how we looked at the numbers.
When I took office 50 days ago, only 8% of Americans after months, only 8% of those over the age of 65 have gotten their first vaccination. Today, that number is 65%.
So the interesting note on timing and things, here's a promise that President Biden now has made about a May opportunity for all Americans.
All adult Americans will be eligible to get a vaccine no later than May 1. That's much earlier than expected. Let me be clear. That doesn't mean everyone's going to have that shot immediately, but it means you'll be able to get in line beginning May 1.
Well, I know some people that have been online with a major healthcare provider for weeks now. It doesn't seem to be enough vaccine here in the metropolitan area. And if they are able to get it, I will let you know. Now, that's President Biden touting May. You may remember back in December, here's what President Trump had to say about May.
If authorized, tens of millions of vaccine doses will be available this month. And we'll get it distributed very quickly. We have that all set. And hundreds of millions more will quickly follow. Every American who wants the vaccine will be able to get the vaccine. And we think by spring, we're going to be in a position that nobody would have believed possible just a few months ago.
So basically, Joe Biden inherits a machine that had been created, was underway, was growing. And Joe Biden takes full credit for everything. I guess politics has not changed, so nothing new here. The transparent administration. It is 6:18. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAO. We have got lots to cover, and we will have KT McFarland coming up this morning, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times, Jim Trustee, of course, our legal counsel, and be talking with Jim about the Cuomo mess. Also, we will talk to Gordon Chang this morning. There's a very important meeting coming up between the United States and China. It will take place in Alaska. It is coming up in the week ahead, and preparations are underway. My understanding is they still haven't determined which side of the table that Hunter Biden will be sitting on, but we will be talking to Gordon Chang about expectations from that meeting and some of the latest activities that China has taken, and that will be coming up with Gordon in the 7 o'clock hour. For now, we will check the latest on the traffic and weather on WMAL.
Good morning. Well, for the most part, we are looking at a pretty nice drive around the DMV on this Saturday morning, but we do have a couple of accidents out there and situations that could be slowing you down. First, on Branch Avenue northbound right at the Capitol Beltway, we did have a disabled vehicle on the ramp from the northbound side of Branch Avenue to the inner loop. That disabled vehicle just now being cleared away, so that on-ramp is now reopened. And we are dealing with an accident in Riverdale on the BW Parkway southbound just after Route 410. The left lane blocked there with the crash and the response. Stay right to get by. I'm Bobby Laurie. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
After an unusually warm work week, we have a perfect spring-like weekend ahead. Temperatures in the 40s and 50s this morning will warm to the upper 50s and low 60s this afternoon, with partly cloudy skies and a northwest breeze. Don't forget our clocks spring ahead tonight. Sunset is at 6:13 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning is 7:21, and sunset tomorrow night will be 7:14 p.m. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
48 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:19 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The situation for Governor Cuomo in New York continues to deteriorate. As of last check, last night, 7 women coming forward. 6 have identified themselves. 1 remains anonymous to the public. The momentum is growing for a long time. The senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, quiet on the topic, but she has now joined Chuck Schumer in a joint statement. I guess she couldn't make one on her own, so she teamed up with Chuck, so they kind of, you know, share the responsibility, deflect the damage. But anyway, they have both come out now and are calling for the governor to step down. That, in addition to 135 of the state legislators in the state house, 80 of them are Democrats. That's the first phase. If there were to be an impeachment, the next phase would be the New York State Senate. We're going to talk with John Gizzi this morning, kind of walk you through how that would play out. And as I mentioned, we'll talk with Jim Trusty this morning about the legal exposure. As you recall, in the first of the allegations, it was things that the governor said. In the latest allegations, it has been the governor touching. And here is what Governor Cuomo had to say yesterday.
Look, it's very simple. I never harassed anyone. I never abused anyone. I never assaulted anyone. Now, and I never would, right? My statement could not be clearer.
And I never would, right? You know, that's that technique of just kind of, that's the subtle bullying, you know? I never would, right? Right? You believe me, right? Come on, come on. He continued.
People know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. Let the review proceed. I'm not going to resign. I was not elected by the politicians. I was elected by the people. Part of this is that I am not part of the political club. And you know what? I'm proud of it.
I am not part of the political club. Boy, that's a statement from Governor Cuomo. Remember his father was the governor of New York, Mario Cuomo? This guy's been a political operative since he was a baby, but he's not a member of the political club. And he expects us to believe him when he denies the allegations of 7 women who worked for him. These are not people that he met in a department store in a dressing room. No, these are people that worked for him. And he expects us to believe him. I don't see that things are going to improve for him anytime soon. He may play the Ralph Northam model from the Ralph Northam playbook, which is to be criticized as long as the media pays attention to you, until they move on to the next story, and you just don't go anywhere. Work for Ralph Northam. We'll see if it works for Governor Cuomo. Oh, by the way, I sent another email to the International Committee of the Television Arts and Sciences, the international arm, the ones that awarded Governor Cuomo the Founders Award, Emmy, and asked him once again yesterday if there were any discussions underway whatsoever, and the international arm did not respond to my email. Not that I was waiting all night to open it. Let's move on to Portland. Portland, Oregon. You may have seen the violence once again in Portland on Thursday night, the attempts to burn down the courthouse again. I want you to remember when the mayor of Portland, Oregon, Ted Wheeler, called for defunding the police last summer. The city council cut $15 million from the police budget. Well, almost a year later, murders and gun violence are at an all-time high. Survey of downtown business owners, two-thirds of them feel that it's unsafe downtown. Well, the genius Ted Wheeler, the mayor of Portland, well, now here's how he's addressing the situation in Portland.
The level of violence on our streets and the trauma that it's causing require a decisive response.
He's also calling for $2 million for police funding. So all of the geniuses in Portland cut $15 million from the budget last year. The place is chaos, and now they want $2 million to try and do the cleanup to undo the damage of defunding the police last summer. Well, I'm glad they woke up. By the way, in Portland last night, the police actually detained a crowd of over 100 protesters. Now, they had demonstrations last night in Portland, and there was a march, but they stemmed it right after it started. And what they did is they had this mass detainment. The police term on that is kettling, and it's a tactic where they surround a crowd. They contain the people within a perimeter. The police told the crowd they were detaining everyone within the boundary for the, quote, investigation of a crime, but they did not specify the nature of the alleged crime. Demonstrators had initially gathered around 8:30 last night. There was an incident of pepper spray reported around 10 o'clock, one arrest made at 11:10 p.m. in Portland, and one protester was grabbed by a group of four police officers and pepper sprayed. No indication of why that person was detained or pepper sprayed, but again, that in the wee hours this morning in Portland, Oregon. We are at 6:26. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. In the news at 6:30, along with daylight saving time this weekend, the weekend could bring Americans fatter bank balances. Officials at the Treasury Department and Internal Revenue Service say that processing the new round of stimulus payments has already begun. The aim is to have the first payments start showing up by direct deposit in bank accounts over the weekend. The president, of course, signing the new $1.9 trillion rescue package on Thursday, the day after it passed in the House. U.S. health officials are warning health professionals about the risk of false positive tests with a widely used laboratory test for COVID-19 and the flu. The Food and Drug Administration issued the alert yesterday for health facilities using Roche's COBUS test for coronavirus and seasonal flu. President Biden's administration is refusing to allow lawyers to inspect facilities where immigrant children are detained. They're refusing to allow the lawyers to enter the Border Patrol tent in Texas, where the agents are holding hundreds of youths. The attorneys say they were allowed to speak to children at the facility in Donna, Texas, but were denied the chance to see the areas where the youths were being held. During the administration of former President Trump, inspections conducted by lawyers under a court settlement known as the Flores Agreement exposed the stories of children packed in cells without adequate food and water, the Biden administration refusing to allow lawyers to inspect those facilities. The attorney for George Floyd's family says a $27 million settlement of a federal lawsuit by the city of Minneapolis is the largest pretrial civil rights settlement ever. Attorney Benjamin Crump said yesterday that the settlement, quote, sends a powerful message that black lives do matter and police brutality against people of color must end. More than 1,000 National Guard members will be leaving Washington over the weekend. Several thousand others will stay on for days or weeks, all in the ongoing mission to provide security for the U.S. Capitol. That mission has drawn criticism from lawmakers and reluctance from the military defense secretary Lloyd Austin earlier this week, approved by the Capitol Police request to extend the deployment of nearly 2,300 Guard members for about two more months because of more possible threats of violence. It's 6:33. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Bobby Lurie is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Some good news on the BW Parkway, making your way southbound in Riverdale. The accident activity we were looking at just after Route 410 has now been cleared away. There's no delays lingering any longer on the BW Parkway. We're also looking pretty good northbound BW Parkway, the Capitol Beltway at this hour. No major issues. The earlier disabled vehicle on Branch Avenue northbound right at the Capitol Beltway cleared away as well. And in Virginia, 66, 395 and also I-95 are all moving along nicely for you. I'm Bobby Lurie, now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
After an unusually warm work week, we have a perfect spring-like weekend ahead. Temperatures in the 40s and 50s this morning will warm to the upper 50s and low 60s this afternoon, with partly cloudy skies and a northwest breeze. Don't forget our clocks spring ahead tonight. Sunset is at 6:13 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning is 7:21, and sunset tomorrow night will be 7:14 p.m. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. Jennifer Harper, of course, she writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
The president sold his $1.9 trillion package to the Democrats, at least on Capitol Hill. Poll numbers say that he sold it to the American public, but did he sell it alone?
No, he did not. And I have a great study for you this morning. If it's too early, well, this is a pretty good study because it says that the compliant media was the force that really did sell the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill to the American people. And this is a study of the coverage of that bill on CBS, ABC, and NBC, a very innovative study, by the way. It's coming from our good friends over there at the Media Research Center. And here's what they say. Instead of scrutinizing bill's spending choices, the broadcast networks built their coverage around its most popular provision, as well as sympathetic anecdotes about those in need. And again, this is the Media Research Center, and they examined 68 stories, which began airing on January 22nd. That was the day that President Biden announced the plan, all the way through to March 5th. That was the final day of the Senate debates. And here's what Rich Noyes, he's the research director over there, kind of the point man on all this. He said the networks mainly directed viewers to think about the $1,400 checks to individuals, mentioning this singularly popular line item in about three-fifths of all of the stories. So that was the big starring thing, $1,400 over and over again, 40 times over. And Mr. Noyes goes on to say that was twice as often as they talked about the money that would be spent on vaccines and testing to fight the pandemic itself. There were only 20 stories that did that. Again, this is coming from the Media Research Center. And also they were emphasizing things like additional unemployment benefits and the $15 minimum wage, or all the feel-good stuff. And so they say instead of scrutinizing the bill's spending choices, the networks built their coverage around sympathetic anecdotes, Mr. Noyes says. And he particularly cited a report by NBC newsman Lester Holt, who told his audience that the economic pain of the pandemic could be found near the White House itself, and a dozen similar stories. About 18% of the total coverage on all these three networks were centered on that kind of emotional anecdotes. And you have to remember, too, and this is going on now where you're seeing a lot of coverage where people are not giving President Trump all the credit for the work that he did launching COVID-19, the strike back against it. And Mr. Noyes remembers that during the Trump years, the establishment liberal media championed themselves as truth tellers who would hold his administration accountable. In covering the first major initiative of the Biden administration, the networks executed a full flip, Bob, abandoning any pretense of hostility in favor of providing aid and comfort for a massive spending bill that goes far beyond what's necessary to help those who are actually in need. So good study from our friends over there at the MRC.
Much of the Republican criticism of that COVID relief package was limited to conservative airwaves, so likely a good chance many of those 70% of the American people have no idea of the impact of the cost of the package in the future on the national debt, and also the fact that so much, as you mentioned, of the legislation is not directed at COVID relief. The Republicans, though, are keeping track of it. And what are they doing that's somewhat unique?
Well, it is kind of unique, and it's sort of funny in a way. And this is coming from the National Republican Congressional Committee. That's one of these pretty amazing groups out there that sort of look after all things GOP, and they are offering a very handy way to follow the socialist leanings of lawmakers. They have now assembled, Rick, a socialist agenda scorecard, and this is a whole website, and it's highlighting the radical policies that House Democrats are pushing, and they're naming names and naming the lawmakers that are doing this. And according to them, this is a website that tracks and catalogs vulnerable Democrats' votes that punish working families to appease Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And if you are curious about this, you can just go online and look at the scorecards. This is socialistagendascorecard.com. That's pretty simple. Again, socialistagendascorecard.com. And according to a spokesman Mike Berg, he says, we are going to ensure that voters have a clear understanding of Democrats' socialist agenda and the damaging impact it will have on their daily lives. So there you go.
With the exception of his appearance at CPAC, President Trump has not been in the spotlight, but you are tracking his movements. What is he up to?
Well, he's up to a whole lot of things, and you're right, it doesn't get covered, but I decided in Inside the Beltway I'm going to have a Trump date, an update on Trump, whenever I get the information, because I think a lot of people really want to know what he's up to right now. And, just today, for example, he issued a statement, and here it is. I hope everyone remembers when they're getting the COVID-19, often referred to as the China virus vaccine, that if I wasn't president, you wouldn't be getting that beautiful shot for 5 years at best, and probably wouldn't be getting it at all. I hope everyone remembers. So he's just continuing to push back. He's got an office down there, and they send out press releases and so forth. But I'm also following what he's doing. And a lot of people don't know that he is in New York City right now by himself. And he arrived in the middle of the week, and there were still some surprise bystanders when the motorcade came through, but he is in New York City. And also I find out that Mr. Trump is expected at the Republican Spring Retreat. It's going to be held in Florida next month, and going to have some speechifying going on there. So I'll keep you posted.
Speaking of New York, they've got a mess on their hands in the governor's mansion. And Bill de Blasio has certainly been a zero as a mayor. What's next in the mayoral race?
Well, very interesting. We have a former presidential hopeful who is now running for mayor of New York City. And indeed, there's so much politics coming out of New York right now with the mayor and the governor and so forth and so on. But this is very interesting. This was someone who was part of the great group of Democrats who wanted to run for president. And he is a champion of what he calls human-centered economy. And whether that's going to work in New York City remains to be seen, but none other than Andrew Yang. And he was a former Democratic presidential hopeful. He's now running for mayor of the Big Apple. And amazingly enough, he very well could win this because there's a new poll of voters out there in the Big Apple. It's coming from Emerson College, an academic poll, along with WPIX-TV and News Nation. And WPIX-TV is a longstanding TV station up there in New York, and they know quite a bit. But anyway, Mr. Yang took a full one-third of the votes, according to this poll, and the closest contender that he had was Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, who had 19%, and the rest that followed, they were all down below 10%. So you have to remember that Mr. Yang's last foray into politics was a very crowded one. In the lead-up to the 2020 race, there were almost 40 Democratic presidential hopefuls, and he distinguished himself in a lot of ways. People remembered him. And back then, CNN had to air 5 candidate town halls. So if it's crowded, if it's New York, it looks like Andrew Yang is going to jump right in there and give it a shot. And the city's Democratic primary is on June 22nd, coming right up. And Mayor de Blasio is kind of on his way out.
President Biden, in his address on Thursday night, did make an interesting announcement about attire in the Air Force.
Yes, he did. And I'll just give you the 3 words of the new attire in the Air Force, and that is maternity flight suits. And they were cited by President Biden in his comments for at the International Women's Day on Monday. And he cited the advent of the maternity flight suit as an example of the, quote, intensity of purpose of mission to really change the culture and habits which cause women to leave the military, unquote. And also he mentioned that body armor, combat uniforms, and updated hairstyle requirements are also part of the new strategy. So that's just a cultural moment to think about.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. And, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend. And don't forget to set your clock ahead an hour tonight.
Oh, gosh. Well, thanks so much for reminding me. And have a good weekend, everybody. Thanks.
You too. It is 6:46 Eastern Standard Time on the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we check the latest on the WML traffic and weather. Bobby Lurie is in the WML traffic center.
Good morning. We're looking at a pretty nice drive right now throughout Virginia. I-95 north and southbound from the Fredericksburg area into the Springfield Interchange, still moving along at speed. No major issues on 66 eastbound as you make your way from I-81 through Haymarket, Gainesville, Centerville, and over toward the Beltway. Over to Maryland now, I-270, I-95, the BW Parkway, all looking good. No major issues on 50 east or westbound as you make your way in between the Bay Bridge and the Capitol Beltway. And in the district this morning, DC-295 and the Southeast-Southwest Freeway are both moving along at speed. I'm Bobby Lurie, now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WML Stormwatch 7 forecast.
After an unusually warm work week, we have a perfect spring-like weekend ahead. Temperatures in the 40s and 50s this morning will warm to the upper 50s and low 60s this afternoon, with partly cloudy skies and a northwest breeze. Don't forget our clocks spring ahead tonight. Sunset is at 6:13 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning is 7:21, and sunset tomorrow night will be 7:14 p.m. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
48 degrees at 6:47 in the nation's capital.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
You're listening to the Saturday Morning Update. It's always a pleasure to have Jim Trusty join us. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. See him often on the Fox News channels. And he is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you.
So last weekend we were talking about the perils of Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, and at that point there were allegations of sexual harassment, things that he had said. The dynamic has changed this week because there are now allegations that he touched women inappropriately. How does that change his trajectory from a legal perspective?
Well, it certainly puts him at more risk than he's been. You know, there's this kind of fuzzy line between something that's really creepy or overly personal and then dipping into the next level, which would be a hostile workplace, you know, for civil liability under the Civil Rights Act. And then that last threshold is when you go from workplace harassment to criminal violations. And when you have allegations of groping, of actual physical touching of these women, then you're into that world of potential criminal liability.
Jim, for the most part, in cases like this, you'll probably just have he said, she said testimony from two people. In this case, we were up to seven allegations as of Friday night. How does that strengthen the allegations and weaken his defense from a legal standpoint?
Sure. Well, it really touches on this thing that they call other crimes evidence when you're talking about the rules of evidence in criminal prosecutions. And I think the easiest thing is to liken it to the Bill Cosby prosecution. You know, in Cosby's case, you had a series of victims coming forward over time, making late reported allegations, I think almost entirely without physical evidence. And any one of those cases, any single case, was going to be a very difficult matter to prove. In fact, Cosby's first trial had one victim, and the government had asked to put in this other crimes evidence, to put other victims on the witness stand. They were not allowed to do it, and the jury hung. So after the mistrial was declared, the court revisited that ruling and said, pick your best five, basically, and the government was able to put five more victims on the stand in front of that same jury. So whether it's a jury finding facts or the court of public opinion, when you start to hear about multiple victims telling at least roughly similar stories, those initial obstacles about late reporting or not having physical evidence start to fade away, and it becomes a much more powerful case. And frankly, that's what Cuomo is living through right now. He's feeling the Cosby effect as these accusations start to stack up and get more credible because of sum of the whole.
Andrew Cuomo is known as a bully. Imagine working for Andrew Cuomo, whether he says something to you or touches you. How much courage do you have to go up against a powerful man like Andrew Cuomo? In other words, does that explain to a jury why these people didn't come forward sooner?
I think it does in large part. You know, I think if you went back decades ago and you were talking about sex offenses or whatever type of crime that happens in kind of a one-on-one context, jurors and judges would be a lot tougher about the idea of not immediately complaining or reporting. But I think that we've kind of evolved to assess these situations on a very personalized level, and we realize that the power that is so disparate between the two is the issue. You know, that a person like Cuomo is very comfortable wielding his power and pretending to be, you know, kind of the emperor of New York. And it's very intimidating for people that are his underlings that have a exciting job underneath him. They're not looking to challenge him no matter what he ends up doing. So it takes a certain amount of courage. And I think what you see in these cases is a situation where it becomes contagious. It's not necessarily people that wanted to make their allegations public, but they start to support each other because the story rings familiar.
Troubling stories in the Wall Street Journal about activity that is being taken on his behalf in outreach to other potential victims. What's going on there?
Well, they're playing with fire is the short version. You know, there's apparently a real group of loyalists for Andrew Cuomo who are willing to make phone calls to suggest that either people release dirt on some of these potential victims or they talk directly to the victims themselves. And now that we're gravitating into a situation where there's some criminal liability on the horizon, some possibility of criminal charges for these physical touchings, it's real dangerous territory to start making these calls. All it takes is a person saying to a victim, "You don't really want to do this, do you? This is going to be really tough. This is going to be really embarrassing." You know, that type of phrasing is the type of stuff that a prosecutor will harp on as they draw up an obstruction charge. So whatever it is that's causing these people to make decisions to help Cuomo by calling out to the victims, they're putting themselves in real jeopardy.
So, Jim, the state laws that Andrew Cuomo may be subjected to have a very interesting history.
They do. In 2019, with great fanfare, including videos of the governor self-congratulating, there was a change in the New York human rights laws that he signed off on that were basically steps to make it easier for sexual harassment claims in New York to be brought by victims. And so it did a couple of things. It took out the language that used to make it fairly difficult. It talked about having a severe or pervasive amount of harassing conduct. That was stricken from the standard for bringing state claims of sexual harassment. It also extended the statute of limitations from 1 year to 3 years, and it discouraged things like non-disclosure agreements and eliminated mandatory arbitration. So it was a very pro-plaintiff, pro-transparency change to the laws in New York on sexual harassment. And ironically, the guy that had that nice little press conference in 2019 may have extended the statute of limitations at his own expense when it comes to some of the civil liability that he might be facing.
Wow. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Jim, thanks for some wonderful information this morning.
Sure. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:54 Saturday morning update on WMAL. Reminder, of course, daylight saving time starts tonight. So early. And, you know, you don't realize it's already in March. Second weekend of March, it's daylight saving time. Anyway, that does start tonight, so make sure you move the clock hands forward before you go to bed. It is St. Patrick's weekend, sort of a muted St. Patrick's weekend. Hopefully, again, things will be better next year. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour on the Saturday morning update, we'll check in with John Gizzi, the White House correspondent for Newsmax and Newsmax TV. We'll get his read on President Biden's address, what was in the address, what was not in the address. And also, you may have heard Speaker Pelosi threatening to unseat a House Republican who has been seated after a very close race in Iowa. We'll get John Gizzi's update on that, what to expect. Also, his take on Governor Cuomo, what's next in the political process if there were to be an impeachment in New York. Starts in the State House, goes up to the State Senate. What are the numbers? How does that play out? We'll talk to John about that. Gordon Chang joins us right after the 7:15 traffic and weather. And we're going to ask Gordon about the upcoming U.S.-China meetings, what we need to be aware of, the recent aggressive activities of China. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up also, and we're going to be talking with Tony about the mess at the border and what's the latest going on at the U.S. Capitol with the National Guard. KT McFarland will join us as well, and we're going to ask her about some of the Biden administration policies that are in effect and to take effect. It is all coming up here on the Saturday Morning Update, but for now, 7 o'clock news is next with Heather Curtis.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.